I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So hello again and welcome to another very special episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I'm one half of that podcast, senior writer for last week, tonight, author of How to Fight Presidents, and writer no longer on strike, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say solidarity no more.
fuck the SAG. Yeah, we made it. We did it. We won.
We did. 148-day strike. I feel like that's the only thing that we should talk about. As of this recording, it was a little over a week ago that we got the email saying that the Guild and the studios had reached a tentative agreement. And then just a few days ago, that agreement was sent to us as members to ratify. And it all signs point to the strike being officially over on October 6th. Assuming that it gets the ratification that we all expect it to get. And in the meantime, we have been allowed to go back to work. And so we did that.
We both did that. We did that pretty fast. I think there's still a lot of shows that are like, we'll wait until the vote's in. Like, there's a lot of shows that are kind of like taking their time. Our shows did not.
No. We got the email late Sunday night. And then the following Sunday, we were on HBO with a brand new episode of our show. Like, we got right back to it in a way that, like, I'd been praying for the strike to end. It was like the thing that dominated the summer and my life, and like a tremendous source of stress and anxiety. And then it ended, and then we got an email that was like, hey, we're all back to work Wednesday. And it was like, oh, I have plans though.
Yeah. What I wanted was the paycheck. I really enjoyed the time that I had to myself. Is there a way we can do that?
Right. Can't we just, like, do the best of both worlds? I get paid and I don't have to work. What did we even strike about?
It's really funny to watch people when they're like, you're back to work. And my reaction is not what they're expecting, which is, yes, it's over. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah. And they test the waters. They're like, is that a good thing? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think so. I mean, it's going to be really nice to be able to support my family again. That'll be good. But also, there's this whole other thing I have to do every day now.
Right. And it seemed like your fall baseball team was really starting to click. And now you're going to have to scatter your focus a bit.
It's tough. It's tough to have peeled off from the kids. Like, it's not just about them anymore. And I don't know. Like, it feels like culture in general is telling me, no, it should always be about the kids. And I'm saying, no, some of it has to be about this cartoon for adults I make, too.
Dad, why can't you hang out as much? I have to work on this cartoon. Can I watch? No.
Absolutely not.
Of course not.
Well, I always tell you, you're not allowed to watch this. Yeah, I have let Ronan watch a couple of, so we do these things called animatic or color screenings, which is just like various stages of the process where the show's not done yet, but it's like looking pretty close at about a color screening. And I have let him watch a few of those. And it's so funny to see the things that like he picks up on in the show, because a lot of the jokes are just, they're way over his head. Calvin Hobbes is over his head. And but every once in a while, like, someone will say something about a butthole and he'll be like, ha, 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 ha. Hey, he said butthole.
He's right. That is funny.
I had to do my, when we got back into the office, obviously all of our passwords has expired on all of our computers. Cause you know, They want to keep that stuff under wraps so much at television shows for reasons they don't understand. They don't want people checking in and seeing that, oh, we came up with a model design for Stan wearing pajamas. But all that stuff is like highly coded. And we had to change our passwords. And I went to the woman who is in charge of all of that. And she's like a saintly person. I've seen her deal with the more elderly people on our staff, and is just so patient with them as they're trying to figure out their computer. And she's like, okay, you're going to want to open it. Have you tried opening it? Like, she's wonderful. And I went to her, I had to get like a little password, a temporary password. And it just gives you a number, two numbers. You want to guess what my two numbers were, Dan?
6-9.
Yeah.
And, hell yeah.
And she went, she said, okay, so you're going to type in that one. And I was like, well, that was weird. And I look and I was like, nice. And no reaction from her. There was no like shared, like, it is funny. It is funny. Yeah. She was just like patiently waiting for me to do it. And I was like, okay, that did not play. And did it. It didn't. The machine didn't work. Had to do it again. I got a new password, which was 63. And I go, not as fun. Nothing. Yeah. And I was like, I wonder if that was a crime. I wonder if what I just did.
I have one 69 story, and then we really got to get into this episode about the strike.
Okay.
But it was like an important moment for me. I was in seventh or eighth grade. I was taking Italian, and part of this Italian class assignment was standing up in front of the room and like calling bingo for the class. Like, you're playing bingo, but you call it in Italian to practice your numbers. And I was calling the numbers, and I came across 69, and I laughed for the class. And then I was like, ha ha, Zisanta Nove. And the teacher said, Daniel, and smacked me, or Daniele, and smacked me. Not like hard, not like still violent or abusive or anything like that. And the thing that stuck with me wasn't the smack and the inappropriateness of it. The thing that stuck with me, like a lot of 14 and 15 year olds, I was under the impression that grownups had one kind of sex, and we invented all these new cool things. We invented 69 and blowjobs, like all this shit that was going to blow their minds if they ever found out about it. So the fact that my like old Italian teacher knew our secret code for the thing that I thought we invented, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're horrendous. And not what only else knows do you it, know? Probably it was like, had practiced it.
Right.
And that's rough, man. That's a rough thing to find out.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this stupid show.
Yeah, I want to know, because we didn't really, in our personal non-podcast lives, talk about it too much. Is it dorky to just ask, like, where you were and what you were doing when you found out the news?
No,
is
I think
that
that's
story
great.
Interesting for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to think about where it was, but I think that it's something I would like to remember because this is going to be historic.
Yeah.
You tell me.
You were at the, as far as I know, you were at the Sherman Oaks Galleria with Bob Iger, telling him, don't take it. Don't take this deal.
It's bad.
Don't
for
let
you.
These
it's
writers
rotten.
Fuck you.
It's poison. It's poison. I got to think about it. Tell me where you were.
Yeah. So I had like a planned, unrelated to the strike, a planned dinner at my parents' house with my girlfriend. And we went there kind of thinking, because at this point it was a Sunday and the studios and the guild had met every day for the last 4 days or so. And all signs were pointing to like, we will probably hear something today. And I thought, oh, it'll be nice. That'll be at my parents' for dinner. And it didn't happen during the whole dinner. And like, my mom had champagne in the fridge. Like, we're not saying anything, but like, we think this might happen and we're all prepared to celebrate. And then, you know, dinner time came and went, and I just went home after that. I was like, all right, I guess I'll text you guys if anything changes. And got home and was just sitting on my couch with Shay and finally got the email at, I don't know, 9-something, 10-something my time. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
And she knew that I'd be looking at my email every second of the day waiting for this thing to come in. And I got the email. I didn't say anything for a second. And then I like went to the kitchen and puttered around the kitchen for a bit. I went to the like our patio and was like looking outside, just like idling myself. And then I sat back down on the couch and I turned to her and I said, we've reached a tentative agreement. And she's like, when? What the fuck? How did you just find that out? Because I was really, again, I'd wanted this for so long, like all of us. And I had like been visualizing this moment and also visualizing getting the opposite of this, visualizing the email coming from the guild that we'd seen a million times this summer, where it was like, we tried to negotiate in good faith, but the studios are just trying to drag this out. They're trying to torture us. So there's no deal and there's no, you know, plans to get back to the table. I'd been preparing for either scenario, and then it happened, and I was just like shell shocked. I was very happy to talk to Taylor Orsi. Taylor is a writer and actor, and they were a strike captain, very active on the lines all summer. And they tweeted something about how, because there's like videos and photos of people in LA and New York, writers getting together at bars and celebrating and screaming and having so much fun. And Taylor was talking about how it's great that everyone can do that, that you're celebrating and you are having a great time. I personally just stared into space for 5 minutes unblinking. And I was really happy to read that. And I reached out to them when I saw that, because I was like, yes, same. I don't know what to do. I just keep like looking at things and mumbling and just like being very aware of my breathing. And I had a little bit of FOMO looking at people partying, but I wouldn't have had the energy to do that. And I turned to Shay at one point and I was like, I think I want to party. And she's like, okay, what do you mean? We can make that happen. And I was like, I don't know. I think I just I feel like I should party. And she was like, that's great. You do whatever you need to do.
I think, Shay, like, I think if you could get me some cocaine, that would be good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I obviously didn't party. I poured myself a little bit of whiskey and was like, ah, yes, here I am partying. And she was like, that's great. I'm going to go to sleep.
Good. I will be partying out here.
Yes. Yeah. I'll try not to be too loud with the partying, because there was like in the back of my mind, I wanted to at some point be around writers and friends in a loud place and just like scream and exhale the same way, much higher stakes, but the same way I felt when they announced
Hitler died.
Biden won the election.
Yeah.
That was like, that was a Saturday when that announcement came out. And so we were working, but we still like paused the work that we were doing, because it was like, we all very justifiably need to go stand outside and scream and or like honk horns or do something.
Yeah.
And like, I need to take a lap around my building. Oh. That was kind of how I felt at the end of the strike, was just like, there's too much energy in me right now and it needs to go somewhere, but I'm also so exhausted and shell-shocked. And like, even Sunday, when you had every reason to be optimistic, there was still a part of me that was like, I don't know, what if they turn around tomorrow and say, just kidding? Or what if the studios leak some terrible thing that sends us back to square one?
Hard to be happy about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was my whole journey. And like texted my parents, like, we're back, we're doing it, we're going to work. And I didn't really do anything resembling a party until 2 days ago, as of this recording.
Oh.
So the Sunday after we got the email, that morning I had a planned half marathon. I'd signed up for a race and I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to party the week of the race. So I'm going to run this race and then there's going to be a race after party and I'm going to go there to celebrate the race and also invite a bunch of friends to celebrate the end of the strike. That was my plan. And then they're like, hey, you have to go back to work. It's like, oh, okay. New plan. I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to run a half marathon. I'm going to go home and I'm going to go to work for a few hours because we taped that day. And then I'm going to show up at the bar. The race after party will have been done. All of those people will be gone. And I'll get whatever friends I can cobble together to just like sit and be with me and have a meal. And like everyone who came was very sweet. And I was like still shell-shocked from the strike and completely exhausted from the run. But it was still the way you talk to a child. They're all like, are you still having fun? Do you want another beer? We'll stay if you want another beer and some fries. I'm like, yes, I need to keep being around people because as soon as I close my eyes, I will be asleep. And this is my party.
I forgot that your schedule is different than most other human beings in that you, like, one of your hardest days is a Sunday, right?
Well, we used to always be on the Wednesday to Sunday schedule. And then during COVID, the plandemic, we switched to Tuesday to Saturday to record on Saturdays because everyone working from home post required more time to turn the episode around to HBO. And then once we didn't have those COVID protocols in place, we decided to stick to the Tuesday to Saturday schedule anyway. It was like, because why not? Because we realized, oh, we actually can do this. We don't need to tape on Sundays.
Right.
We can give our staff a normal weekend day. And the only reason it was different for this first episode back was because we didn't know we would be allowed to work until Wednesday. And so we did a Wednesday to Sunday schedule. We had a one-day weekend this week, and now we're back to Tuesday to Saturday. And this is the content audience craves.
The reason I'm asking is that I know that you go to church, and I imagine that that job was cutting into your church time a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I used to have a job where I was testing DVDs, and I worked with this guy, Otto, who belonged to a church. In fact, several of the people at my job were all hired through this church, so they all kind of knew each other. And there was a day where we had to work on a Sunday, and I was in his little cubicle because there's DVD players everywhere. So imagine that you have to just like go into people's offices constantly to like make sure a DVD plays. And as I'm like testing this DVD, I'm talking to him about Sunday, and I'm like, "Yeah, you gonna miss church?" He's like, "Yeah, devil did it." And I was like, "I'm sorry?" And he goes, "Devil did it," and not with like a smirk on his face or like, "Isn't that funny?" He's like, the devil has organized this. The devil has ensured that I can't go to church on Sunday.
Wow.
I was like, oh, you believe different things than me.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy incredible. Shit. And so when things like conspire against his faith in his life, and it doesn't have to be like an individual who's doing it. Like just like fate itself conspires against him. That's the devil doing it.
That's kind of handy.
I think so. I think it would be a really happy way to live.
I met a
you have somewhere to put all that frustration.
Guy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I met a very religious guy in college, and we would talk about church every once in a while. And I didn't realize the degree to which he was into it and what it had done to him until. Hurricane Katrina happened. There's a connection, I assure you. We were just like talking about how me and my roommate and this very religious buddy were walking around campus talking about how devastating it was. And you know, was anyone going to go and like use the next break to try to help rebuild that kind of thing? And this guy whose name I'll say is Chris, because that was his name.
Yeah.
He said, after like a quiet period while we're talking about how devastating it was, he was like, "Well, New Orleans, city of sin. That's what happens if you sin." I was like, it was so freakish that none of us even clocked at the second that New Orleans isn't the city of sin. It's the Big Easy. City of sin is the other one.
Yeah.
But no, like
the desert one
was even thinking about that at that time. Because it was like, oh man, Chris is a fucking maniac. Chris thinks it was supposed to happen. Because
right.
I don't know exactly, because he thinks jazz is sinning.
Yeah.
It's unclear what he thinks happens in New Orleans.
That's incredible. I am jealous of those people when a disaster happens and they have nowhere to put any of that, like all those questions of like, why? Like, why would this happen? Why is this if there's a benevolent God, why would they let this happen? I love that there's somebody out there who's like, it's God's plan because this city was the next Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
Or like people do that with Haiti all the time where they're just like, yeah, Haiti's the portal to hell. So that's why it keeps getting all these earthquakes and stuff, because God's trying to shut it, And you're like, oh, man. Shit. You like a whole separate bookcase of beliefs that I don't even understand.
Also, life must be super easy for you.
I know.
You could just move to one of the places that you don't think is going to open up a portal to hell.
I know. Well, I do know where I was. And I'm going to reveal something on this podcast that I haven't talked about before. And I've talked to you just briefly about it, but only because of like how strangely the timing laid out throughout the strike. So I was at a memorial service when we got the news. So I didn't actually see it until the end of the memorial service when I like checked my phone. And then I was like, yes, we are done. But I was feeling a lot of other things as well. So at the beginning of the strike, basically the day before we struck, I had traveled back to Colorado and my dad was dying. And so I was there for him when he died. And then we went on strike. This is when I broke my wrist as well. So it was a particularly low point for me. And
the strange thing about recording a podcast together as people who talk off podcast all the time, it's just so the audience knows, I knew already. That's the reason that I didn't say sorry and gasp or anything like that is we've talked about this.
Right. So I had gone back home to witness a death and then I don't want anyone to be like write me or anything. I don't want that. It's something he wanted. He had a debilitating disease that was making him very unhappy, and he was able to do through legal means, he was able to do an elective death, and so it's what he wanted, and it was good for him, and it was a very brave choice of my mother's to make, and like they did a great thing. They did a good thing. This is what he wanted. And we didn't do the memorial service until just recently. And so I was back in Colorado. I was back in Colorado. And I kept checking my phone. I thought it was going to happen on that Friday when they told everyone to get back on the lines. There was a Friday that where like there was buzz that something was happening, that everyone's getting very excited. And then that Thursday night, we got a message from the guild, and they were like, get back on those lines tomorrow, please. Everybody, I want them on the lines. And we all thought, oh, they want everyone on the lines for when they make the deal. And that was only helped by the fact that as we were on the lines that day, they're like, usually we only stay till noon in the summer because it was so hot. The guild messaged everybody in the middle of the day and they were like, please stay till 2:30, which is our old schedule of picketing. And we're like, oh, shit. Like I think this is a deal. I think we're all going to be here together for this. So like, we're all like on the lines, like checking our phones. It never comes down. We stay till the end. The deal never gets done. And maybe that was their plan. That just something fell apart in the deal. But
yeah,
we left. I went to Colorado, went to a memorial service, spoke at it. And then at the end, when we were like transitioning from like the service to, I don't even know what you call it, not a reception, but like the more repast. Fun part. Huh?
Repast?
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah. So at a restaurant on the way there.
Repast.
On the way to this, they should come up with a name for it, honestly. But I was going to this. I'm going to call it a repast. I think that would be a fun thing to call it. I was going to that and saw it. I was driving with my mom, and I'm like also opening envelopes for her because people just bring stuff, and reading letters to her. I also see that I'm like, oh, I'm going back to work, and she's like, that's good, right? And I was like, yeah, it's good. And that was the extent of like the celebration that I had.
Yeah. Wow.
But it is strange that his death and then his memorial service bookended the entire strike. It's absolutely crazy.
I know. I try to never encourage this kind of thinking, but it's possible you're the most important person in the world.
That I did it, or at least my family somehow did it.
I mean, it seems like things are, yours is one of the only lives that seems to make any kind of narrative sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to think we all matter, but there's a possibility we don't. And I'm glad I'm here at your coattails.
Yeah.
Because I'll get like, you know, if this is Truman Show, if you're getting Truman Showed, then it sounds like I could be your Noah Emmerich. I could be your buddy that shows up every once in a while.
Do you think, and I just, in a way I haven't figured out yet, that the devil did it?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, it was. And like I commented on it to my brother, and he's like, "It is. It's weird. It's weird that that happened that way." Yeah, it was a. It was definitely a low point when I lost my job, broke my arm, and then my dad died.
Right.
I was like, "Okay, absolutely. All right, get it all out of the way at once."
Yeah. And so did you, when you get back to LA, did you party at all?
No, I didn't do shit, man. Oh, you know what actually was really nice? Sorry, I'll say one more thing. We did go back to work yesterday, and that was the first time that I really felt like the vibe that like, oh baby, we're back. It was really fun. As much as like I hem and haw about going back to work on this podcast, I went back, I drove into the office, that felt good. And then when we were all there, we were all just buzzing. We were all so excited to see each other again and to hang out and just talk. And we got no work done whatsoever, but
no, of course
we all just sat around and just like hung out and like, we're all in different pods. So that means that we're like each little room is working on something different. It couldn't have ever worked because we were all just bombing each other's pods, being like, I haven't seen any of you. Just like sitting down and being like, and now we're going to talk about the things I did and just taking ownership of the room. But yeah, it felt really good yesterday, but that was the only celebration we did.
Yeah. I'm surprised because I live in Jersey, obviously, and I would go into the city every once in a while where we had a lot of marching and picketing. And when I was visiting out in LA, I would join you guys on the lines whenever I could. But really, I was disconnected from the bulk of the protesting. You were out there every day.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't like some kind of group chat coordination of like, let's us, the people who spent the entire summer walking in circles together, let's us have a big meal somewhere or like some kind of party or something.
That would have been a really good idea. I'm not even, I think I don't even have those people's contact information because you just see each other every day. You don't need it.
Right.
And all of a sudden it's like being a child again where you're like, oh, I need to I remember phone numbers. Like this is the person you see every single day. And I will likely never see a lot of those people ever again in my entire life.
Man.
I did go to there was a WGA event. There was like a big meeting that we were going to go to. And I thought, oh, this will be a party. This will be like a party atmosphere. And it was more like a State of the Union. It was not fun. It was a lot of like, we sat there and they talked on and they said stuff. And in between pretty much every sentence, everyone had to stand up and clap. And
I would have hated that.
And I was like, this isn't what I wanted. I also, little things will like send me in a downward spiral. I got there and I expected there to be desserts or like food there. Cause these WGA events, famously, like there's good food. There's like stuff that I really want to eat. There's all these like little tiny finger desserts that I'm like, yes, I will try that. Try that. They didn't have that, but they did have tea and coffee. And I'm like, yeah, I'll get some hot water and some tea. And I pour some hot water into a cup and there's just all this like black dusty specks in it. And I was like, oh, that's bad. And I tell somebody who works there, I think there's something in that one. And then I went to a different one. Same thing. There's just all these old cisterns that had coffee in them at some point, and now I couldn't even have tea. And so I was like, and I don't know anyone here. I don't like this event. I already don't like it. There was like rallying of the troops and like it's supposed to be a celebration, but it didn't really feel like that. It felt like I had a lot of jobs to do there.
Yeah. And I can picture exactly what that's like. And hate it because like the clapping, I'm sure we've talked about this before. I don't enjoy the physical act of clapping. It's like very irritating. I don't know who does like it except people on stage. It's nice to hear it. And so I do my part as an audience member. Specifically something like a WGA State of the Union victory lap is just like tailor-made to have a lot of some earned, some unearned applause breaks.
Yeah.
Because you're introducing people that have been on the negotiating committee who have been working hard all summer long to get the deal that we all want them to get. And you also, just by virtue of what you're talking about, a lot of sentences are going to end with something that like begs for applause.
Yes.
Not like,
and we triumphant, won.
Really. We're just like, yeah. Right. Yeah. But our numbers, but we kept coming out, and it's because of each and every one of you that we passed this historic deal.
Yeah.
And then now I won't say another word until you clap.
Right.
This day cannot continue
until you clap.
Until you all do your part and clap to my satisfaction.
And to their credit, the people on stage, they're all very engaging. They're fun people to watch. Chris Kaiser is a great speaker. David Goodman, like he said, like it felt like a rally kind of. Yeah. And they did really, these guys are heroic. Everyone up there on stage did something really great. But man, it's just a lot of clapping. Yeah. And then they went through like lock captains and I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Chris Kaiser, man. So if anyone doesn't know, he's a member of the negotiating committee. He might be a co-chair. He has been with the Guild for decades. He co-created Party of Five. He's just been like working for so long. I had no idea who the hell he was until he was the guy on the strike Zooms who would explain the situation very eloquently and then give us a pep talk of some kind. For this guy I've never seen before in my life. And now I'm watching him on Zoom, just captivated. Like, I think this guy should be like president. I think I'll fucking follow this guy anywhere.
Yeah. Him giving orations is like, you get it. Finally, when people talk about in ancient times, like Alcibiades or Lincoln or somebody who like, they were really good orators. They could sway people with a speech. I was like, okay, yeah, but people were just dumber then. I'm like, no, Chris Kaiser could do that.
Yeah.
He just talks and I'm like, yeah, whatever you want. I want to get it for you.
Especially in like early days of the strike when I first saw him speak for the first time and like it's such a well-written speech, very well delivered with like the kind of speeches they do in movies. And because movies are written by writers, but I still had the thought while I'm watching him speak and it's so emotional and he's so captivating. I'm just like, why the fuck did anyone think they could win a war against writers? You clowns, win a PR war against writers. Look, this is all we want to do. All we want to do is write things where a character seems really important and says freedom in Braveheart or you can't handle the truth.
Right.
And as we write these movies and TV shows, we're secretly thinking the guy saying the cool thing is us.
Right, yeah.
And now you gave us an excuse to be the guy saying the cool thing.
Yeah, you gave us a reason to like rally behind a cause, which is like what we wanted all along.
Yeah. Joke's on you. I wanted to be Jimmy Stewart, and now I can be.
Yeah, I would follow him anywhere. He was great.
One other thing that I don't know if it's the same with you because you're in LA, which is very aware of the strike in Hollywood and all that stuff. The day after it was made clear that we had reached a tentative agreement, Shay was asking me, who is there anyone from my life that reached out that I was surprised by? It's like, no. And in fact, almost no one reached out. Which was very humbling as far as like, oh, the rest of this is not huge news to most of the people in my life and in the world. Like there, like a few family members were like, hey, I've been monitoring this, and so they know that the strike was over. But most people, I unless I tell them that it's over, didn't know. A friend of mine, Susan, like 3 months into the strike, asked me if we were still striking. And I thought like, yeah, what the fuck? Don't you go to Deadline every day to read the strike diary to see what people are saying?
You got to read the online newsletter. Yeah. I had a similar experience where no one like contacted me. But people that I would run into, they all seemed and because it's Los Angeles maybe, but they were all like, they knew immediately. They're like, hey, the strike's over. Like even my aunts and uncles and stuff. They were all aware, like it was in the news enough that they knew, but nobody was checking in. The only person during the strike who checked in with me was a neighbor who was like, hey, I don't know any other way to ask this other than just be like completely candid. Are you doing okay financially? Like he was like, you're gonna help me out. And I was like, yeah, we'll be okay. My wife's working. But it was like, I thought about that for a long time because it's so long to not be working. And for everyone in your life to just be like, I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I would get that from family a few months in. And we're all very grateful. We don't ask follow-up questions, but parents just being like, so 3 months, you still, this has got to be hard, huh? I'm like, yeah, but I'm okay. And they're like, great. No follow-up questions. But I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, like, am I?
Yeah.
How did I do this?
It was 4 months. So it's like a quarter of a year that you didn't work.
Yeah.
You were not getting a paycheck at all. And yeah, it was like, I started to think about, well, okay, let's get real here. If I need to get a job, could I go back to Patagonia and do retail for a little bit? They'd probably let me come back for a little.
Yeah.
Like nowhere that you can go. You can't get a job and tell them that you're a writer because they know that the minute the strike ends, you're leaving. So you basically have to start a career by lying to an employer.
Did I tell you this is humiliating and then I have to leave because I have work? On a lark, applied for a couple of jobs.
Yeah.
Partly just
on
like
a lark. That's a
yeah. I mean, we weren't in dire straits or anything, but I did want to get out of the house more and have like a sense of purpose. And also just like, even though my savings were healthy, it's undeniable when you're spending money but not making it. And so I was like, let me just go on Indeed and apply at a couple places. And the last job I had before I was a professional writer was bartending in 2008. So I applied for some bartending jobs and got one of them and then didn't go to it. I like had tremendous anxiety about what it meant to be going back to a bartending job during all this. And a few of them I didn't get.
Interesting.
And at that point I was like, don't, cause I did tell them that I was a writer for a television show and I'm looking for work because we're on strike. And when these fucking beach restaurants emailed me back to say that they went with someone else, I thought like, I don't know. Isn't it interesting that I worked Last Week Tonight? Like, just hire me for that. I'm probably going to be a shit bartender at this point, but like, I don't know. Bring me on for a couple of days. Ask me what John's like. I'll tell you.
Maybe you failed the test. Maybe when you did your blindfolded martini, they didn't like, there's a few too many splashes came out of the shaker.
I just kept stirring all the drinks with my finger because that's what I was used to. Because that's what I'd been doing for a while.
Yeah. Stirring with your finger and then sticking the whole thing in your mouth and going, just right. All right. Well, you have to go to work, Dan. And I understand
that. I have to go to work, thankfully. Yeah.
I do actually as well.
Oh, yeah. One other dumb thing that someone in the comments of one of the YouTube versions of this show, someone said, with a strike ending, does this mean you guys won't do filmed episodes anymore now that Daniel is back to work? I just want our listeners to know, Soren is also a television writer. I don't know how much clearer we can be.
The relief on my family's faces when I was at this memorial service, and they'd be like, so what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm writing for an adult cartoon and it's called American Dad, and they go, oh I'll write that down, I'll have to check that out. And I'm like, it's okay, I don't watch it. The relief on their faces when you say that. I mean, of course I watch the show, it's my show, but the relief that they feel when you're like, it's not a big deal, like I'm not being self-important here. They're like,
no.
Oh,
and it's also
okay.
Like, don't worry, you will not be quizzed on the show the next time I see you.
Right.
This isn't going to be.
Also, I don't think it's for you, honestly. When I'm writing it, I'm not thinking of you, Aunt Jane. I don't think that you're the demographic. All right. Well, everybody, this is our show. It's Quick Question. You already know that. You can follow Daniel on Blue Sky. The minute he blue skies something, the minute he skeets, I will let everybody know. But you could also follow him on Twitter at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren_LTD. I didn't say your Blue Sky account. I think it's Daniel.O'Brien.
I have no idea.
You don't even know. All right, well, I'm Soren.Bowie.
I'm so in the dark about Blue Sky that when you said skeet as the euphemism for tweeting on Blue Sky, I don't know if that's a joke or not.
It's half joke. Early on, everyone was like, what are we going to call these? They came up with skeets. It became like the discourse of Blue Sky for, I want to say, 2 months.
Ah.
And And now people have sort of settled on it because there's nothing better.
Okay. I probably won't be there or do anything.
I'm there, though. I'm doing jokes there into the dark, getting maybe 2 likes on a joke.
Yeah.
So you could go see those. You can also email the show at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. Yeah, we have a sound engineer, editor, just an all-around great guy, producer, in Gabe Harder. You'll find him nowhere. And we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/quickquestion. Our theme song is by MeRex. You can find their music at merex.bandcamp.com or anywhere you listen to music. We also have a YouTube, which is you just go to youtube.com and then /@QQpodcast. And you'll find videos of Daniel and me looking like wartime presidents, just aged. Mm. Aged more than you probably have.
Yeah. God, our outro is so long. That's so much stuff. Well, nobody, and there's no way it's working on anyone anymore.
Think about every podcast you listen to.
I am switched over to another podcast at this point in the episode. Once Evans on Behind the Bastards is like, well, thanks for joining me. Do you have anything you want to plug? Do you have any pluggables? I'm like, I'm done. Fucking
next. Out. Next, yeah.
but hope there's nothing important in the last 6 minutes of every podcast I've ever heard.
Surely there's a psychopath somewhere who needs this information so that they can find us and hurt us. So this is for you, psychopath. Okay, bye.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you. All right, I want to hear your thoughts. I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you. All right. It's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite? How did you get? I think you'll have a great time, yeah.